Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. There are about 18,000 car dealerships in the United States. Only 266 of them are black-owned. Well, my guest tonight owns three of that 266. Dan Bannister bought Sheehy Ford in Marlow Heights last year. That dealership had been in the Sheehy family for more than half a century. And tonight, we talked to Dan Bannister of Bannister Automotive about his dealership's black entrepreneurship. And we may even ask him a few questions about cars and trucks. Give us a call if you have a comment or question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Bannister, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Mr. Fisher. It's an honor to be here.
Well, you know, you work in what I would call rare air. It is a really exclusive fraternity of black major brand automotive dealers. But I want to hear the story because you went to what is it, the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. I'm not going to hold that against you. But you started as a criminal justice major. So
that's right.
How do you? I hope you weren't stealing cars.
Well, I'll tell you. I have to start off by saying this though. But my son, he plays basketball at Hampton University, the real HU.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold that against him either. This conversation's going downhill real fast.
and we just beat you guys a couple weeks ago.
So oh, Lord have mercy. Is that what we're doing?
But no, I was recruited out of high school. I would play three sports, football, basketball, and track, and I had scholarship offers in all three. And I chose Charlotte. I was raised in Minneapolis. I went to one of the two 50-50 black high schools. So it was, there's not a lot of black people in Minnesota, but I actually was able to go to the ones that had, 50-50 ratio of black-white, and we were like a powerhouse in basketball. So I chose basketball. I went down to Charlotte and played there for 4 years and thought I was going to make it in the NBA, and that didn't happen. So my backup plan was that I was going to get into federal law enforcement or, some sort of law enforcement. And in that time, I was going through the academy and I picked up a job, selling cars, temporarily. And my first month out, I was salesperson of the month. And I said, wow. I said, okay, well, let me try this for a little bit longer. And as it went on, I kept getting promoted. And, back then when, that was back in 1992, and it was very difficult to get a salesperson's job at that time. And they hired me based upon my notoriety with playing basketball. They felt like, I would be able to attract a lot of UNCC alumni and customers just because I was known. So I don't know if that worked or not, but it worked for a little while. And, I never intended on the car business of making it a career, but as I kept getting promoted, and I said, "Hey, I might be pretty good at this thing," and so opportunities kept arising, as you said, I started out as a salesperson, and it's very rare in our industry, no matter what your ethnicity is to be able to work your way up the ladder, and I worked almost every position and learned every position before I got the position. That's kind of my mantra is understanding that, you got to be ready when opportunities present themselves. And, all I've ever asked for in my life is please give me opportunity. When I'm on the basketball court, I just want the coach to give me an opportunity to show him what I could do or he or her what I could do. And the same thing in my career in the automotive industry, I just wanted an opportunity. And, once, and a lot of people say that they want opportunities, but the difference for me is that when I get the opportunity, I'm already ready for that opportunity. Like when I, the first management job that I had at the dealership in Charlotte, I already learned how to do the job. So when somebody said, you know, the person quit and I just raised my hand and said, hey, boss, I can do it. You sure? Yeah, I can do it. I'm ready. I've been doing it. I've been pacing it. I've learned the position. So I jumped in and I was able to run with it right away. And then my next job as a general sales manager, I already knew the job. As a general manager, I knew the job. When I was a general manager, I learned how to be an owner. I thought like an owner before I became an owner. And I think that's real important for young adults out there is to understand is that, you know, opportunity is one thing, but you need to be prepared for that opportunity. When it comes, you need to be ready to play. And, you know, that, and that's one of the things that I like about the car business because it's a lot like sports. You wake up every day and there's a challenge. It's like you have a game and you're, you know, whether it's selling cars or making a customer happy, there's always a challenge. You're always chasing something and you're always trying to, you know, win at every opportunity. And that's why I kind of like the car business from that standpoint is that it's like even though I couldn't play basketball, I could win at the car business and, you know, getting promoted and being one of the top performing Nissan dealerships in the country for many years. You know, it felt like I was winning. And, you know, the adrenaline rush of being able to go out there and talk to a customer and help them and put them in a better situation is powerful. And it's an adrenaline rush. It's I can't really explain how it feels to really be able to, when you help somebody and when somebody comes in and they're in a tough situation, they have a high interest rate or their payment is very high or they have a lot of negative equity and I'm able to put them in a better position and they leave with a smile on their face. And then I get to see them 2 years later and, you know, then they move up a level in cars, you know, because what I really like and what passionate about is teaching our young adults about how to make themselves, put themselves in the best position when they get out of college or get out of high school and how to, you know, plan their finances and not bite off more than they can chew because many of our young adults, they want the flashy thing. They want to go out there and get the, you know, the high-end luxury car right off the bat and that's usually the car that has 100,000 miles on it and, you know, they get these high interest rates. And, you know, for me, I try to teach, you know, financial literacy from the standpoint is get yourself in a position where you can, it's not a struggle to make your car payment, that you're fully covered with a warranty. The car's not going to break onto you. It's good on gas miles. The insurance is good. So before they make a decision, they're all thinking about all those steps before they get to even buying a car. You know, when customers come in today, most of them are educated, but not all of us are. So, you know, I want to sit down and educate that college graduate that, hey, you know, make sure that you don't, you know, go get a bunch of credit cards like I did when I was in school. When I left school, yeah. I had 15 credit cards. Fortunately, I didn't pay them late, but, you know, that could have killed me. And that could have, you know, those things where you make those big decisions that become huge decisions later on in life, you know, because you go and get a credit card in college and you default on the credit card, that's going to cost you.
It'll definitely get you in trouble. I've got a lot of questions for you and a whole lot to talk about. We are okay. Talking to Dan Bannister of Bannister Automotive about the three dealerships that he owns, Black Entrepreneurship, and his growing empire. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You said that you were thinking like an owner. What does that mean? Before you became an owner, you were thinking like one.
From that standpoint is acting like it's yours, treating the business like it's your own. And, you know, when you own something, you act a little bit different. I mean, you I don't know the best way to describe it. It's like you're taking ownership of something. It's yours. And so you have a passion for success. You want to see it flourish. And if you look at some of the unscrupulous car dealers, you know, they're in it for a short period of time. It's like, I'm going to make as much money as I can. I'm going to take advantage of my customers because I'm going to be out and I'm going to move to another dealership or I'm going to close this one down. I'm going to go somewhere else. Well, for me, as an owner, you look at it as as you know, for the next 20 or 30 years. So you want to build a legacy with your consumers so they want to come back and continue to do business with them and not have it be a one-time transaction like some car dealerships are out there. And that's what you have to kind of worry about, that, you know, when people are bouncing from dealership to dealership, there's usually a reason why. It's because they're running from whatever dirt they did before. And so I really pride myself on, you know, the longevity of the staff that we have and to build, you know, a good community relation. It's like, you know, when I go out in the community, I don't want to have to hold my head and not be able to wear my name, the dealership name on my chest. I want everybody that worked there to be proud and to know that we do the what's best for the community, and that's what it's all about. It's how do we uplift our community? How do my dealerships enrich the community? How are we impacting the community? Because it's not a one-way street. It's not where everybody comes in and buys a car and nothing comes back out of it. So I'm involved in so many different charities, on so many different boards that we strategically try to help where the community needs help. Like in my store in Norfolk, there's been a lot of violence that's been going on, you know, and it's all over the place. The DMV is a prime example. But I got the idea from Baltimore, where they had the Midnight Basketball League. So we partnered with the city of Norfolk, and we started a Midnight Basketball League here, and have the police officer or the coaches, and we're building rapport with them. And you can look at the statistics. When we had the basketball league going on, the violence dropped.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that, it's an expensive endeavor, but how does that impact the community? And that's what I really want to focus on. I want to not to be the legacy of how many cars that we've sold, but how many souls that we've saved, and how many people we've been able to help, and how many people that came in as like I did when I was kind of a broken young man when I started selling cars. I didn't have anything, didn't have any money, didn't have a car, didn't have anything, and I worked my way out of that. And to be able to see the young men and women that we're hiring now that may be out of college or maybe out of high school that were struggling, but be able to provide a good paying job and to provide them a roadmap to success, what their success looks like, and for them to grow.
Well, let me.
Go ahead.
I've got some folks on the line who want to talk to you, and I want to make sure that we get some of these calls in. And as I said, I've got so many questions for you about the business. But let me go to the phone lines: 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kiera, calling from D.C. Kiera, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good evening. Thank you for having me. My question is pertaining to my experience, okay? So when I go to the mechanic or getting my car fixed for a problem, I end up coming home that being told, oh, there is more problem than the original problem that I came with. Is that because we women, or for myself, because I'm not familiar about cars, or I'm being cheated, or just wanting to know? And it happened more than once.
So that's a really good question. And, you know, that's an age-old question, for particularly for women car owners. But go right ahead, Mr. Bannister.
Well, you know, thank you for the question. One of the things that I've noticed over the years is that, you know, women are some of the most well-informed, intelligent people when it comes to cars, more so than the guys are. And, you know, us as car people, you know, unless you're going to not a non-franchise dealer, we understand that. And that most of the time the women are the decision makers and all that. But what I would say to answer your question is that, you know, cars are mechanical items. They're going to break. And sometimes when you go in, they're going to find one thing and it leads to another thing and all that. What I would recommend when that happens is for you to get a second opinion, is not go to and accept the first proposal that you're going to at any dealership, is that make sure, you know, if you want to come do business with me, I would encourage you to still get a second opinion. You know, you want to make sure that one, you have the person that's very knowledgeable of what they're doing, and two, that you just want to keep people honest. And we miss people. We miss things. I mean, we're not perfect people. We try to, you know, do what's best for the consumer, but, you know, we may miss it once in a while, but I hope that you don't think that that most car dealerships are trying to take advantage of women or anybody else. They're just I promise you, when I sit down with the women that I deal with, I mean, they're very in tune to what's going on. And they're some of the best negotiators around.
Well, so I've got to, Mr. Bannister, I've got to take a break, but I do like that advice. I guess it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Kiera, this hurts. You talk to your doctor. Doctor says this. Talk to another doctor. Second opinion. I like that bit of advice. Thank you so much for your phone call. Ron calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you in just a bit, but first we're going to take a break. For just a few seconds. And don't forget, you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the Daily Drum program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back to talk cars in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking to Dan Bannister of Bannister Automotive about his growing auto dealership empire and black business. If you have a comment or question for him, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ron, calling from Maryland. Ron, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Bannister, I'm very impressed to see you as a minority dealer in the area. I got a lot of vehicles from GE Ford when they were there. But you said something very interesting on your way up the ladder, that you had a passion for what you do. I'm second generation in a corporation of our family, 75 years in business. My question to you is, did you have a love for the business, or was you infatuated with the money?
That's a really interesting question.
That's a good question, Ron.
Yeah.
I think at the time I got the job because I needed to make money, but then I fell in love with it. And I saw the impact that I could have and how I could impact people's lives in a positive way. And I really believe that if people are chasing money, that's not going to be the sign of success with their business. And they have to understand that we're in a customer service business, and you're not there for the customer and to put them in a better position than what they came with, your business is probably going to fail.
Yeah. Makes sense. Ron,
I agree.
Yeah, Ron, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melissa calling from Waldorf. Melissa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hello, Harold.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, yourself. When I purchased my vehicle, I purchased the Platinum plan, which is the highest. But every time, and I was told that any time I brought my vehicle to the dealership, I would only have to pay $50. But every time I bring my car to the dealership always says, well, you know, your warranty, they'll pay for this, but our rates are this. So I've always been trying to find out what the discrepancy is.
So thank you for the call. So you're saying that you're bringing it for maintenance, regular maintenance?
Yeah, just regular maintenance. I bring it in. I got the Platinum plan, which is the most expensive, so it covers my engine. You know, it doesn't cover, like, tires, you know, regular wear and tear, but it covers everything else.
Well, Melissa, there's a couple different products. There's one that's a warranty, that's an extended warranty. Then there's another product that's called maintenance, where it's prepaid maintenance, where you come in and you can get your oil changes, tire rotations, and all that kind of stuff. So I would need to see which one you have. Because the Platinum program, if you bought that from Sheehy, that's kind of their car care policy that they have that should cover most things that you come in. I don't see why it would cost you $50, but I would have to see the plan in order for you to do that. If you'd like to reach out to me, I would love to look at your situation to see if you're being treated the correct way.
Is this an extended warranty, Melissa? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I purchased it's not from your dealership. I purchased a BMW. So, and I've been always told, oh, they're so expensive to maintain. So I made sure I got the most expensive plans. so that anytime I had to bring it in and I needed any work done, I said, okay, well, if I only have to pay $50, you know, I'll pay the platinum plan. But every time I go in.
Melissa, it's one thing. If it's a warranty issue where something is breaking, or is it just a getting an oil change or a tire rotation?
Yeah, she said it was an extended warranty. She's talking about an extended warranty.
Yes, an extended warranty.
Not for maintenance, but for repairs.
Right. So are you coming in and getting repairs done, or are you getting maintenance done?
I'm getting repairs done. Like, I may bring it in.
Okay. So you would want to look at your policy, and it's probably there's a box checked on it that's a $50 deductible.
And it's checked.
Okay, so then there's a couple of different options. Normally when you buy an extended warranty, there's usually a zero deductible, $50 deductible, $100 deductible, and I think maybe a $200 deductible. But it sounds like when you purchase the warranty, which is a very good idea, especially with a BMW, that you chose a $50 deductible, which is pretty inexpensive probably compared to how much you're going to spend, you would have had to spend if you didn't have that.
Yeah.
Can I have your information so I can reach out to you?
Yeah, how can people... reach you, Mr. Bannister?
I would love if I can, my email address.
Yeah.
I would love is dan@bannisterauto.com. That's BANISTERauto.com.
dan@bannisterauto.com. And yeah. Melissa, this email.
I'd love to give you my phone number too.
I don't want you to do that because you won't get
fine.
Any sleep.
I have no problem.
Let me give you mine.
Melissa.
Let me give you mine.
Yeah. As always, this podcast will be on WHUR.com. I will put your email address on WHUR.com, just like all of the programs, Monday through Friday. And we will post your email. So anyone who's attempting to reach you can email you. And that way, for people who are driving right now, they don't have to write it down. After 8:30 tonight, this podcast, Mr. Bannister's photograph, and his email will be posted on our website.
And Harold, I would love if you would put my phone number there, too, because I give my phone number out to all my customers.
Okay, so what's the number?
It's
757-410-8000. Okay. Melissa, good luck to you. Good luck to you, and thank you so much for your phone call. 202.
And Harold, sure. you know what? One of the things, too, is that a lot of car dealers, the owners, don't make themselves accessible.
Yeah.
I want to make myself accessible to all my customers so they can call me at any time. They can send me an email, whatever, and I will definitely get back to them. But I think that's what that helps with my dealerships is that if they have an issue, they can talk to somebody. They don't have to, you know, be placed on hold and nobody calls them back and all that. Please call me. Please email me. If you have any questions or you have an issue or whatever, I would love to help you and assist you any way I can.
Before I go back to the phone lines, I did want to comment on something that you said, you know, earlier about the rush and the satisfaction that, you know, that you get for, putting someone in a vehicle. And it literally can change your life. My daughter bought her very first car this year with a little help from dad and grandma. And, she was, afraid to get out on the road. But as a very, very young woman, she needed transportation. And so she got her little car. And once she got in it, I don't see her now because she's just zipping all over the place. But the thing that I observed was not just my daughter's happiness, but I observed the salesperson's happiness because not just because he sold a car. We know that he was definitely trying to make sure that happened, but he was happy because she was happy, particularly when that was a watershed moment for her, a personal milestone. So those kind of things do those kind of things do make sense. And as a father, certainly, you know, I was glad that I was able to make that happen as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that what's better than seeing your daughter with a smile on the face? So, you know, that's big. But, you know, and that's what we really try to make the experience the best possible experience, because, you know, especially when you're bringing your daughter out there, you don't want to have to deal with a bunch of mess, and you want it to go smoothly and all that. We really focus on that experience, especially with new car purchases.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. CJ calling from Northeast D.C. CJ, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, hello there. How are you guys this evening? I just want to say thank you so much for having this conversation, number one. Number two, you were dead on when you talk about loyalty from customers. I have been going to the same dealership since the 90s, buying the same type of vehicle because I love the car. And my last vehicle, when I bought in 2016, I did buy the maintenance plan. And just as you said, the type of plan that I purchased, I didn't have to pay, not even an oil change. I think when I got to 80,000 miles is when I needed to start putting out any money. But it does make a difference. And you continue to do what you're doing, continue to do what you're doing in the community. Because when I got my first car, I had a horrible experience coming out of high school with the dealership in that's no longer in business, and they were just taking people's money. So it's very important that you're able to be, you know, go into a dealership and feel comfortable and be treated very well. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
that's
CJ.
That's awesome. Thank you for the comments. And I agree. I mean, what it's all about is making sure that the consumer has the best possible experience you have. And if there's an issue, that you're there to take care of it, because we're not perfect. We make mistakes, but we have to be there. That's and right. Own up to it and take care of it. And, you know, when you're treated well by any business, I'm the same way. I want to keep going back. When you know what to expect and you get the proper treatment, like restaurants and stuff like that, I frequent the same establishments because I know what type of treatment I'm going to get, and that's what I like. So thank you very much for those comments, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that our consumers have the best possible experience.
CJ, thank you so much for your phone call. Abdul calling from Bladensburg, Maryland. Abdul, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I've been looking to buy a new car, right? But obviously with the market, the way the market is going, cars are overpriced right now, right? So I have a great car. It's a BMW 2013. When I bought it at 80K, you know, and you would think it would let me down, right? And I'm 160 right now because I'm a travel coach. So I travel around a lot when I drive. I mean, when I coach, and right now I'm thinking at 160, maybe I should start rethinking my options and maybe buy a new car, right? Once again, even if I buy a new car, I want to buy a used car. So I'm thinking even a used car right now, you know, you're looking to buy a good German car, used car, you're thinking about 20,000. Now, is it 20,000 because that's how much they cost?
When you say 20,000, Abdul, what do you mean?
$20,000.
Okay, you mean a $20,000 markup?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, okay. So yeah, and that actually was one of the questions that I had. You know, as a result, we know of the pandemic and, you know, shortages on, you know, on parts and chips and everything else. It seems that even when I go to my dealership for service and I'm walking around the sales floor, there is a $15,000 markup What is that? I mean,
that's a lot. That is.
Yeah. What is
so,
that?
So let me tell you what's really been going on with the car business. The car business is that when the COVID hit, it shut down all the plants, and I'll give you an example. I used to carry at my Nissan stores about 700 to 800 cars on the lot. Now I have about 60. So what's happening is that you have a lot of people that are looking for cars as well as businesses because, you know, like Hertz Enterprise and all that, they weren't getting the cars they needed to rent. So they were coming to us to buy the cars. And then we would have people that, brokers that would come in and say, hey, I know this car costs $20,000, but we'll pay you $5,000 over that because we need the car. And so we would also have customers that come in. Let's say I've had a Ford Bronco is like the most popular vehicle that we sell. If it listed for $50,000 and I sold that for $50,000, the next day the customer could go sell it for $70,000.
Mm.
So the supply and demand forced the dealers to say, well, if the customer can make $20,000 off of the next day, then why would I allow them to do it? Why wouldn't I take some of that profit, especially when we're not selling 300 cars a month, we're selling 30 cars a month. So that was kind of what happened. But right now, the market has shifted. The more new cars are coming in, the prices of new cars are coming down, the prices of used cars are coming down. But even though that people were paying, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 over for certain models, they were also getting $10,000 or $15,000 more on their cars that they were trading in. So it kind of balanced itself out because we had about a year period where the used car prices actually increased. So we were having people that would come in that bought a car a year or two beforehand, like in 2020 or 2019, and they were offered more than what they actually paid for it 2 years prior, and then they had 40 or 50,000 miles on it. So I think that was a once-in-a-lifetime event, and I think we're correcting it now, but that's what's been going on. So this is actually a pretty good time to buy a car if you don't have a trade. Or before, it was good if you had a trade, but now, even if you don't have a trade, you can get a good value on a new car or a pre-owned car because the market has kind of corrected itself.
Thank you, Abdul, for that question. I've always wondered what that was about, and now I know that, you know, a lot of customers weren't just coming in to buy cars. They were coming in, you know,
they're flipping the cars.
Yeah, to flip the cars. Yeah, that's...
You can flip in business because, I mean, if you think about it, my car was 4 years old when I bought it, right, in 2018. And I spent, like, what, $15,000? And now you can get a four-year-old car for less than $22,000, right? And then you're like, do I wait with the way the economy is going? Do I wait and see? Because right now the demand is slightly going down. The gas prices are going down. People are not buying as many cars. Carvana is going down. It's going bankrupt. Do I just wait until all the cars are back in the lots and then try to go now and buy? How long is that going to take? Do you see people trying to look for a new car, getting a chance to buy a car for less than almost the price of a brand new car? Because at $25,000, I'm thinking, well, maybe if I add an extra $5,000 to $10,000, I could get a brand new car or maybe an electric car. But I'm not ready for that electric car yet, right?
I've got to move on, Abdul. But I do want to kind of streamline this piece about. Every car dealer, as we know, Mr. Bannister, is going to say, now's a good time to buy a car because business is business. So let's just put that out there. But we are now moving into the first half of the last month of the year. Is there any truth to, you know, to the thing that we've long heard about buying cars closer to the end of the month or closer to the end of the month at the end of the year? Does that really make a difference?
We're motivated to sell a car on the first day of the month as much as we are the second half of the month. But the difference is the manufacturer coming out with a special rate like 0%, or are they coming out with additional rebates in order to help us sell the car? Because the price for us isn't going to change unless the manufacturer comes out with some type of special. And that's kind of what drives the market is when they come out and offer some extra incentive to buy a car. So, and I'm not saying that the last 12 months or 24 months is the best time to buy a car, but it was a decent time if you had a trade-in. If you're just buying a new car by itself, it probably wasn't. But now, again, like I said earlier, the market is shifting, and it's now a better time for you to buy a car, a new car, than it was before, and used cars, because of the prices are not going up. Because back a year ago, the used cars were even priced higher than the new cars, so which is kind of crazy for me from my standpoint.
Abdul, thank you so much for your phone call. Why is that? Because my car is 10 years old, and yet the dealership that I bought it, and I bought it used, my car's a 2013, I bought it in 2015, the car is paid for, but yet the dealership, as recently as 3 months ago, was offering me almost what I paid for it 8 years ago.
You should have taken it.
Yeah, but
you can't get that much now.
Well,
but
true.
Again, if you do take it, you have to replace it.
So that's my point.
Back in the same,
yeah, that's my
same
point.
Situation.
And I love not having a car note. You know, an extra.
Well, you're not helping the economy.
I'm helping the Fisher Foundation. However,
the Fisher holder.
That's right. I most certainly am. It's wonderful not to pay. Not to have that $400 plus per month coming out of my bank account for the past 2 years. That's a lot of money.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. And I will also say, to, I believe it was Melissa's point, one of the things that I did, and I've said this to our listeners before, when I bought that car, I spent $900 on the oil change for life. A lot of folks would say, oh my God, $900 for oil change for life. I drive 100 miles a day round trip.
Oof. That money's out of that one, didn't
it? Yeah, and it said oil change for life. That oil, that $900 worth of oil changes paid for itself in 2 years.
Yeah, and also the increase in the cost of crude oil and all that has affected that, and you are locked in, so you get it no matter how high the cost of gas and oil goes up, so you're good.
Yeah, I would imagine, depending on what you're driving, and for me, like I said, I drive a lot. It's highway, but it's 100 miles round trip, 50 down to the radio station, 50 miles going home. But the thing I did want to ask before we run out of time is, as you said, you went from general manager to thinking like an owner to being an owner. Buying a car dealership, correct me if I'm wrong, that's not like getting a used car loan.
It definitely isn't, and I had to go through it, man. I mean,
talk to me in layman's terms for our listeners. How is something like that done? How do you buy a car dealership and then another? And then let me say, you did, and you know this, you bought Sheehy Ford. That's iconic in the D.C. metropolitan area. I mean, Sheehy Ford dealer is very, very well known.
Yeah, they're the powerhouse. It used to be one of the top stores in the nation, but it's not an easy thing to do. One, you got to have experience. You got to have the stats, how many cars you're selling, your market penetration, how you're doing with your customers. You got to have the money, and then you got to have the manufacturers that are willing to allow you to buy a store, because you have to get approved by them. So I could have all the money in the world and want to buy a store, but if I don't have the track record, they're not going to let me buy it. So for me, when I was selling cars and I was a general manager, general sales manager, what I wanted to do, I wanted to make a name for myself by being one of the top performing dealerships in the nation. So when my opportunity became to own a store, they couldn't turn me down. Because I've seen people that will say, that they got to that point, hey, I got my money, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to buy it. Then the manufacturer says, no, we can't help you. You don't have the proper credentials in order to buy the store. So, and one of the things that keeps many minorities from buying stores is that the lack of capital, because these dealerships are very capital intensive. You got to have money to be able to operate the business. And anybody that's, you know, made a payroll understands that you got a lot of money coming in, but you got a lot of money coming out, and you got to be able to manage that, to be able to make sure everybody gets paid and no checks get bounced and all that kind of stuff. But it took me 20 years to be able to buy a store. But I believe that by year 10, I had the credentials to buy it, but the manufacturers weren't giving me an opportunity to buy the stores. And Nissan was the first one to really give me an opportunity. And then after I'd had good performance with them, then I made built relationship with Ford. So that Ford, they came to me and said, hey, we want this store to be your store. We feel like you would do very well here. It's underperforming store. It's kind of forgotten about. They're not, you know, for me, from my perspective, they weren't taking care of the community like it needed to be taken care of.
Mm.
It was a one-way street, and it was one of their biggest stores and performing, but they said nobody wanted to work there, and people were telling me it's not a good store to go to, the community, this and that, yada, yada, yada. I know the community. That's a great community, and they just didn't have the proper people in there to support the community. And I've had a lot of challenges since I opened that store, because it had such a bad reputation from the people that had running it. If I've had to really do a lot of work to clean it up. And that's one thing that I've been very good at over my career is taking a failing business and making shining it up and make it a pearly little diamond. And I know that Ford store there is a diamond in the rough. And the community needs that, because,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't, I was embarrassed by some of the treatment that the customers got when I got there. And we had customers that didn't have their cars for 6-8 months. They were sitting on the lot, and people didn't know what's going on, the lack of communication. So those are things that, you know, when you buy a new business, that you have to go through and make sure everything's, that you can make sure the customers are being taken care of the right way. But it is a very intensive process to be able to buy a dealership. It's just, I mean, just like somebody trying to buy an NFL franchise or NBA franchise, you can have all the money, but they can say no at any time. So, like, I think Jay-Z and somebody else, Bezos, are looking at the Commanders.
Yeah.
Well, the rest of the owners have to say okay.
Yeah.
And if they don't, it doesn't matter how much money they're not going to be able to buy the dealership or buy the business. And it's a similar the way it works with the car industry.
You started, as you said, during the 90s, selling cars. Now you own three dealerships, and so you've been able to observe the evolution of the business. What do you believe, particularly for black car owners, black customers, what do you think the impact of electric cars will be in the black community? Because, you know, I think a lot of people are still kind of persnickety about them. You got to have a garage, and you can't just leave it out, you know, out front. It doesn't have an engine. You don't get it. You know, it's a different thing. What are your thoughts about that?
It's different. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience. We've been selling EVs at my Nissan store since 2010, so I've had a lot of experience doing that. But not just the black community. I think that if you're not a homeowner, it's going to be very difficult for you to own an EV. And I'll give you an example. I was out in California, and I rented a Tesla. And Tesla's a good car. I rented it, and I was trying to find a place to charge. And Tesla has their own charging infrastructure. And I drove around, and I finally found one. But there was a line of, like, 20 cars.
Mm.
All the chargers were taken. And I would have had to wait another hour, maybe, or two to be able to charge my car. And that's not convenient. You know, people want their cars because they're convenient. You know, if they were good at doing mass transit or whatever, you know, that's one thing. But when you hop in your car, we're used to being able to go to the gas station and filling up our cars in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So the advantage, if you have an EV and you have a charger at home, you can charge overnight. It's not a big deal. So, like, for you, you were saying that you drive 100 miles a day, 50 miles there, 50 miles back. You would be a great person if you have a home. If you're a homeowner, you put a charger there for EV, because you're not going to pay any gas.
Right.
For gas and very little maintenance. But not everybody can do that. And that was my one of my biggest concerns even 2 or 3 years ago, is that, you know, somebody that lives in an apartment complex and they have two chargers and there's only two people that own EVs, that's fine. But once you start getting to 20 or 30% of the people in the complex having to charge their cars at night, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it is.
And I had that problem when I drove back from D.C. to Chesapeake. I had a difficult time trying to find a fast charger, because you have some, there's a level one, level two, and level three. Level three is the fastest charger. You can charge maybe 100 miles within in about 15 minutes. A level one, it's going to take all day or even overnight to charge it. And level two, you can charge it maybe in about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
But there are not many level three chargers out there. So I don't think we have the infrastructure right now, even though I think the electric cars are great. The Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Ford Lightning is an exceptional vehicle. But if you're not a homeowner, it's going to be very difficult for you to be able to get into the AEV business. And it's also, you got to look at the cost of ownership.
Yeah. Mr. Bannister, I hate to cut you off. I could talk to you for another hour, but I only have 10 seconds. I want to thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on the dealership in Marlow Heights, and good luck building your empire. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Harold. Appreciate it.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, December 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.